Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 26 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this finish off the action moments of part two of Band of Brothers is my good friend Paddy Flynn of the Great Escape fame. He's Roger's great nephew. Big X. So wait, are you considered Little X then? Or are you or Little X once removed or something like that, or Big X once removed?
Quite possibly. Second X, twice removed or okay. Something. We're not sure. Okay. Fair, fair doing, Robbie, well.
Fair enough. Yeah, great having you back. I'm glad you survived the weekend with me. You know, and are now back to talk about Band of Brothers. And my the first thing I want to say is I want to apologize for that you know, you sort of get a little cheated here because you're not going to get 5 full minutes. You only get 4 minutes and 29 seconds for this particular, for this segment. So I apologize, but it is Groundhog Day. So maybe you'll see your shadow today. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe we'll do it all again tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll do it all again tomorrow today, you know.
Yeah.
It could be. It's very possible. Bill Murray will not be joining us today, as far as I know. But you never know. Maybe Punxsutawney Phil will show up.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, especially on this podcast. Who knows? Episode 26 begins with Garnier continuing to complain and ends with info about West Point. So we ended things yesterday with some of the men deciding to make a meal in the back of a truck. And we saw that Winters is starting to get a little closer.
Yes.
To this area. Yeah, he hears something going on. So, as he gets closer, we see Garnier opens up the flap to the back of the truck and goes, "Jesus Christ, give me some air!" And everyone starts laughing inside. Winter's just watching. And then he says to Garnier, he goes, "Evening." And then he goes, "Oh, hello, sir."
Very reminiscent of... We were just discussing before we started here about Mel Brooks. It was very, very reminiscent of the cowboy campfire scene with the beans.
Yes.
Just in a Second World War environment.
That's right. Well, why not? Makes sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. There's always got to be a bean scene in every movie, I would have thought. The natural order of things.
Very natural. They were all very natural there.
Yeah. I love how I've just noticed on the back of the truck there you've got 45 mph max.
Yeah, exactly.
USA, as if anyone needed to know where they were from.
Exactly.
And caution, left hand drive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Winters pulls up the flap and looks inside. And, we get to see some of the men that are there. We see that Joe Toy's there. We see Malarkey. We see Garnier. We see Compton. Also can see Lipton. There's a sixth guy that right now I don't see his face, so I couldn't tell you exactly who it is. Winters goes, "Did something die in here?" And he goes, "Yeah, Malarkey's ass." And they all start cracking up. And then Buck says to Winter, "So any word on Lieutenant Meehan yet, sir?" He goes, "Nope, not yet." Garnier goes, "Don't that make you our commanding officer, sir?" He goes, "Yep, it does." And then Toy says, "Sir." He goes, "Joe, the lieutenant don't drink," because he's passing him the flask or the bottle. Mm-hmm. Take a drink. And it's very interesting because up until now, Garnier has chided him about the fact that he don't drink. And now he's saying, the lieutenant don't drink, but he's saying it in a way that I guess he has more respect for him after everything they went through that day.
Yes. Yeah, I think
they had
a fairly rocky start in Normandy, and Bill was, as we talked about in previous episodes, Bill was out for blood.
Yeah.
So, and I think Winters had to do a lot to rein that in. But still didn't want him, you know, he wanted him going out and doing his job, but in the right way.
Exactly. And then Winters surprises everybody and actually takes the bottle and goes, well, it's been a day of firsts. And he looks at Garnier and goes, don't you think, Garnier? He takes a little swig of the booze, and Garnier goes, yes, sir. And, you know, again, he Winters also knows that his men need this. They need this little bit of downtime.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, which is very commendable for the whole thing.
Yeah, I think he understands the balance of things, doesn't he? And how things need to be in a certain way, and knows that the men need to cool off. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that Lieutenant Compton is in there as always, and he was picked up for Winters in episode one.
Yeah.
For you know,
for being too chummy with them with the guys.
Absolutely. But then I imagine, well, the way I'd like to see it is, if you're in this situation, you would want everybody to be like brothers, dare I say it. You know, the idea of these guys are, they've gone through hell, not just sort of Kurahi in the training camps, but also getting themselves over there and being part of D-Day. That's mm-hmm. that's a big thing. So. Exactly.
And then Winter says, carry on. And then Garnier goes, good night, sir. And he looks back and he goes, oh, Sergeant. He goes, sir? He goes, I'm not a Quaker. And then, then he, like, ducks out, you know. So what do you know about Quakers?
Absolutely nothing, Rob, but I'm sure you were just about to fill me in on that.
Okay, so they are a religious sect that is known as the Society of Friends. They are Protestant Christians. Mm-hmm. They refer to each other as friends because in John 15:14 in the Bible that's how John, they refer to each other as friends, and we refer to them as Quakers because the founder of the movement, George Fox, ended up telling a judge to quake before the authority of God.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Their belief is that they believe in every human's ability to be guided by the inward light to make the witness of God known to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As of today, there are approximately 400,000 Quakers, with 49% of them being in Africa and only 22% in North America. Mm-hmm. So that's very, very interesting.
And do they abstain from alcohol as part of that religion, or is that just a Winter's thing?
No. That's part of the things that they believe in. They right. They were opposed to slavery. They are pacifists. They refuse mm-hmm. to swear oaths. I'm trying to see if there's anything here that discusses alcohol.
I think it's safe to say that Winters is not a pacifist, and he would have signed an oath.
Yes.
I would have thought.
Yeah. They refrain from alcohol, tobacco, and drugs.
Okay.
They also oppose abortion, and They believe in human equality, and they recognize that men and women are equal in within the religious aspects of everything.
Fascinating.
So I mean, they know that he's from Pennsylvania, so they assume that he must be a Quaker. And
Okay.
as he after he walks away, so one of the guys says, "Well, he's from Lancaster County. He's probably a Mennonite." And someone goes, "Hey, what's a Mennonite? So do you know what a Mennonite is?"
I do not. I like to think I'm getting a modern education now through Band of Brothers into the world of religion.
Slightly. Right, so Mennonites are connected to the Amish.
Okay.
They're Baptist Christians that can trace all their roots back to the Reformation, and the reason they are known as Mennonites is because one of the first leaders was named Menno Simons, who was around from 1496 to 1561 in the Netherlands. And
Oh.
he himself was a contemporary of Martin Luther. And
Okay.
so the idea was is that they believe in the mission and ministry of Jesus. The idea of what they do there is they have very strict laws, I guess you can say, about church discipline, shunning of excommunicated, non-swearing of oaths, marriage within the same church, non-resistance. The idea is that they must obey Christ in everything that he preached. They were moved from place to place due to their religious beliefs, and
Right.
they are also known as pacifists. So
Okay.
again, let's put it this way: it doesn't sound as if Winters really fits into either of those
No.
categories. What's interesting is the book doesn't mention the word it doesn't say anything about Quaker or anything. So it makes you wonder where the whole idea here is, from that perspective. I don't know the answer to that. What Winters really was,
No,
because I
might have
don't
to.
think it, I mean, based on what I remember, it's not mentioned anything in the book about it. Here, I guess it's the idea, just because it's he lived in Lancaster County in Pennsylvania, which is an area of Amish and Mennonites and stuff like that. So I guess that's the basic idea of where it comes from. But
Okay.
again, there's nothing that really discusses it that I was able to see. But it definitely is an interesting question, because they do discuss it numerous times in the first
Yeah.
and second part about the fact that he, you know, the Garnier keeps calling him a Quaker, because Garnier is also from Pennsylvania.
Of course, yeah.
They're not that far from one another from that perspective of where they grew up.
Yeah, it's definitely small town versus big city, though. I would have thought with Bill Garnier being a Philly man, wasn't he?
Him and
Yeah.
both he and Babe Heffron
Hmm.
were both in South. I mean, according to Wikipedia, he was buried in the Evangelical Lutheran Church Cemetery
Oh, okay.
in in Ephrata, Pennsylvania, which is really interesting because I live in a town called Ephrat, which I live in the, I guess, the original biblical town of that. And, you know, the one in Pennsylvania is named after this one. So that's really cool. I never realized that. That's great. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't mention anything here about his actual religion.
Mm.
But he was from Lancaster County. So, you know, there is something there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The question is whether he, you know, no, he was living in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So, yeah, that's, you know, I guess he liked chocolate, not necessarily. he was a chocolate farmer. Come on.
yeah. He's a cocoa guy. Okay.
Yeah, he's cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. Cocoa. Well, that's really annoying, because when I was in the States a few years ago, I drove past the area that was known as Ephrata, and had I known that Winters was buried there, I might have gone, you know, just to see the memorial for that. I was driving right by it. Oh, that's annoying to find these things out 4 years later.
it's not as if you won't go back there
I have no idea. I just randomly was driving past there and saw the name, and I was like, hey, that's where I live. You know, so, and I took a picture and sent it to friends of mine, you know, saying, look, I'm in Pennsylvania, and it's the same town name. So, what can I tell you? So, yeah. So my assumption is, based on what it says on Wikipedia, is that he is neither a Quaker nor a Mennonite, but rather is a Lutheran. And just
some sort of Lutheran, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, Winters leaves the area. And, you know, actually, before he leaves, this whole conversation, you know, the fact that he's just throwing at them that I'm not a Quaker, and, you know, all the men start laughing. And I think this is also a very good point to show, you know, beforehand, he, you know, we talked about the fact that in the first part he chided Compton for getting too chummy with the men, but here he's joking around with them also, you know, maybe because it's, you know, now that they've you know, gone through this I guess baptism of fire together, maybe it changes things.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both know from having officers visit in the military, mm-hmm. It sometimes it can be a very awkward affair, you know. The boss comes in and he'll say, you know, everything good, how are we doing, and he'll try his best to build some sort of rapport, but the rest of the guys will sort of go, who's this guy, he's not here with us,
right?
But Winters is a very different leader, and he was there leading from the front throughout Bray Corps and the operations that they did on D-Day. He knows what they've been through, because he was there in front of them, leading the way.
That's
so
right.
I think he's most definitely earned that right to interject and catch up with everybody and things. I think they would give him a lot more respect because of how he is as a leader and how good he is.
Right. And then Winters walks away and starts playing with something as he's walking. I wasn't able to figure out what it is at first. And then we eventually find out what it is because Nixon shows up and goes, hey, Dick, wait up. He goes, what? And he starts telling him, he goes, you know that map you found? It had every Kraut gun in Normandy on it. Oh, yeah? Yeah. And then we see that what Winters had in his hand was like a can of tuna that he was having trouble opening up, and Nixon takes it and goes, here. And then he says, don't ever get a cat.
Don't ever get a cat. Yeah. It's such a random thing as well, because you'll see in a bit, doesn't do anything with it. Neither of them do. They just open it and chuck it away.
Well, he loses his appetite. And then Nixon says to him, he goes, well, what's on your mind? And he goes, I lost a man today. He goes, oh. He goes, huh. He goes, thanks. John Hall, New Yorker, got killed today at Brecourt. He goes, I never knew him. And then Nixon says to him, yeah, you did. He goes, radio op, 506 basketball team, Able Company. So it's interesting that Nixon, you know, is able to make the differentiation, and by saying to him, look, you know, this is a guy that he was on the basketball team. You know who he was.
Yeah.
And this was like years ago, obviously, you know, when they were in training or maybe in Tacoa at the time or whatever. And then Winters goes, well, he was a good man. He goes, man, not even old enough to buy a beer. And we see that it takes its toll by the way that they, look at this.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, Winters loses his appetite because, he hands Nixon back the tuna can. He goes, not hungry. So, you know, I guess it's a somber moment.
Yeah. Winters changes his entire demeanor here.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you can tell it's gotten to him. I mean, my question when I was reading, or when I was writing my notes on this was, you know, Nixon is intelligence. He would know. He should know who was lost on the operations that the companies were involved in. So he would automatically know that Winters had lost a guy.
No, but he does mention, it is Nixon who says Hall. He says. He says Hall. According to the subtitles, he says Hall.
Yeah.
And then he goes, thanks, because he gives him the tuna, and then he goes, hey, John Hall, New Yorker.
Mm.
So, again, it's neither here nor there. We don't know if 100%, but I believe that Nixon's the one who mentions it.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and then Winters continues walking and Nixon stands still. And then Nixon calls to him and goes, hey, Dick, I sent that map up to division. I think it's going to do some good. So, you know, again, it's a slight little line that basically tells us, Winters had a great find. And I love how while they're having this conversation and they keep showing us the different sides, you know, of each of them looking at each other. You can see in the background flashes of what looks like lightning, but it's probably from artillery or planes or something. You know,
the war raging on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This was right at the start too. You know, this is D-Day or D-Day plus whatever, you know, it's right there.
It's D-Day plus half a day. Or it's still D-Day because it's, we don't know if midnight is past yet or not, but it still is June 6th, even though everything starts on June 5th, you know. That's everything.
The idea that we're still other units, other regiments, other companies all getting involved in stuff all the way around France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for that you have to watch The Longest Day to get an idea.
Yes.
Of how much was really going on there. And then Nixon just takes the can of tuna and just tosses it.
Yeah.
You know, at least find someone who might want it. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, maybe there's a local cat that'll find some use for it, but I don't think they need to worry about getting caught for littering or anything so. at this time in the world's history.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And then we see Winters walk off, and then the shot changes, and he's walking towards us by walking, I guess, up a hill. Or up a slight hill or whatever, you know, just looking around, looking at everything that's going on. And we, you know, he takes off his helmet and we start hearing a voiceover from him. You know, he leans against a truck where you can see the American flag. And then we hear Winter say, that night, I took time to thank God for seeing me through that day of days and prayed I would make it through D plus one. And if somehow I managed to get home again, I promised God and myself that I would find a quiet place of land someplace and spend the rest of my life in peace. I guess in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Farming chocolate. And then the music cues, and we get some of this amazing music while we watch the battle in the distance. You know, you see anti-aircraft shots going up. You see, I guess, a town on fire. I mean, it's amazing what they show us here.
Yeah.
You know, he's not in the thick of the war right now, but he's in a position where he can sit and watch it. You know, as he sits down on this Jeep. It wasn't a truck. Before it was a truck, it's a Jeep. You know, and the American flag is on the windshield type of thing. But again, it's done really well, and then the camera begins to pan out as we're watching Winters, who just gets up and starts walking back, you know, towards where he came from, and puts his helmet back on as he's, you know, he tries to fit his helmet properly as he walks on, as you know, the music continues to play, and again, it's I love the music of this series. It's great. Michael Kamen does
really, really good.
Amazing job.
I think I love the contrast between the starry sky in the background of whichever town was ablaze.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw flak explosions, and you saw the tracer fire, as you said, and you saw the town, you know, the whole place burning. And the contrast between the smoke coming up through and then the stars in the sky was just beautiful. It was so well done.
Right.
And then that sort of silhouetted walk back down the hill again.
That's right. Yeah. And then we get on the screen an excerpt, and it says, for destroying the German guns at Brickhorn Mountain Manor, the following medals were awarded. Bronze stars, Walter Hendricks, Donald Malarkey, John Plesha, Joe Toy, Carwood Lipton, Cleveland Petty, Myron Rainey, Popeye Wynn, and then silver stars, Buck Compton, Bill Garnier, Gerald Lorraine. And then we get to see the final one come onto screen, and it says the Distinguished Service Cross was awarded to Lieutenant Richard Winters. Then we get more information, and it says Easy Company's capture of the German battery became a textbook case of an assault on a fixed position, and is still demonstrated at the United States Military Academy at West Point today, which I think is amazing that Winters was able to think of this idea of how to take on, you know, randomly how to take on this fixed position at Brecker Manor. And, you know, here we are 80 plus years later, and people are still using that. They're still teaching it.
Absolutely. And the idea that he took men who had been gathered from all over the countryside. He made do with whatever he could at the time. And, you know, it must have been, I wonder if he'd have gone through the motions in his head and gone through what he wanted to do and said, I wish I had this guy here or this guy here or this guy here. But then he took the best people for each role that he could possibly think of, and he communicated effectively and went out there and did it. You know, he must have been a very tactically knowledgeable person even from the start, because he would have been mentally and physically preparing himself as best he could.
Right. I definitely think that's true.
Now, I believe he was actually put forward for either the Medal of Valor or the Medal of Honor for that.
No, Medal of Honor. He was put Medal forward of for Honor. The Medal of Honor.
And then it was basically sort of demoted back down to the Distinguished Service Cross.
Correct. Do you know the reason for that?
No.
So there's apparently some sort of crazy unofficial rule that they don't give out more than one Medal of Honor on a particular day.
Okay.
and someone else got the Medal of Honor on that day, and therefore they couldn't give it to him. So I've seen discrepancies
Yeah.
as to what who really got it, instead of him. All right. So according to the book, it says Sinkfoot Winters in for the Congressional Medal of Honor. Only one man per division was to be given the ultimate medal for the Normandy campaign. In the 101st, it went to Lieutenant Colonel Robert Cole for leading a bayonet charge.
Oh, okay.
Now, I actually had always been under the impression that the person who got it that day is Teddy Roosevelt Jr.
He's one of them.
Okay.
Well, so there were 10 given out on D-Day and the Normandy campaign. Robert G. Cole,
Right, well,
Carlton
that's
Barrett.
right. Cole was the one that I just mentioned.
Yeah, Carlton Barrett, awarded for actions near Saint-Laurent-sur-Mer. Arthur S.
On
De...
D-Day, right?
Yeah, or it just says Medal of Honor recipients from D-Day and the Normandy campaign. Arthur F. DeFranzo, awarded for actions near Vauban. Charles N. Deglopper, awarded for actions at Murderay River at Lafayette. Walter D. Ehlers, or Ehlers, rewarded for actions near Goville. Joe Gandara, awarded for actions in Amfreville. Jimmy W. Monteith Jr., that's a good name. Colville Sumer on Omaha Beach. So that must have been. Frank D. Peregrie, awarded for actions at Grand Camp. John J. Pinder Jr., Colville Sumer, and Theodore Roosevelt Jr. at 56, the oldest and only general to land in the first wave at Utah Beach. Famously rallied his troops who'd landed off course by saying, "We'll start the war from right here," and led them to secure the area.
In The Longest Day, it's actually played by Henry Fonda, and you see that he I'm pretty sure he has a cane while he's running through the whole thing. He actually died that day, and so I mean originally Roosevelt was recommended for the Distinguished Service Cross, and they decided to upgrade it, I guess because he was both a Brigadier General and he was the son of a former president.
Isn't it funny how those things happen?
Surprisingly, very, very funny, very. Sorry, he died a month later of a heart attack.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, throughout World War II, Roosevelt suffered from health problems. He had arthritis, mostly from old World War I injuries, and walked with a cane. He also had heart trouble, which he kept secret from army doctors and his superiors. On July 12, 1944, a little over 1 month after the landing on Utah Beach, Roosevelt died of a heart attack in France. He was living at the time in a converted sleeping truck, captured a few days before from the Germans. He had spent part of the day in a long conversation with his son, Quentin Roosevelt II, a captain who had also landed at Normandy on D-Day. He was stricken at about 10 p.m., attended by medical help, and died at around midnight. He was 56 years old. On the day of his death, he had been selected by Lieutenant General Omar Bradley, now commanding the U.S. First Army, for promotion to the 2-star rank of Major General in command, the 90th Infantry Division. These recommendations were sent to Eisenhower, now the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. Eisenhower approved the assignment, but Roosevelt died before the battlefield promotion.
Deep.
And Patton wrote, Teddy died in his sleep last night. He had made three landings with the leading wave. Such is fate. He was one of the bravest men I ever knew. Interesting that Patton said that of him.
Yeah, very much so.
So that's pretty amazing.
That's not just a thanks for coming award, is it? Let's be
No,
honest.
no, 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 no.
Okay.
Definitely not. Okay. So did you have anything else that you wanted to say about these 5 minutes or anything? Or sorry, these 4 minutes and 29, 4 minutes and 29
No,
seconds or anything else?
just how much I've enjoyed every second of it.
That's great. Of talking to me or of watching the entire miniseries?
Everything, all of the above. It's
Oh,
been great.
okay. Okay. That is great. I appreciate that. All right, so today's daily segment is Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movie pair brother pairs, or it could be more than two, groups of brothers in movies. So
Good.
why don't you
Bounds,
start
if
with
you
you? Exactly. Why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
will. Okay. I'm going to go for, I think I'm going to go for Lost Boys in number five.
Okay.
Some interesting brothers in there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, it's a classic. I love that movie. Number four, From Dusk Till Dawn. The brothers of Tarantino and George,
George
what's his name?
Clooney.
George Clooney, of course, is. Yeah. Again, an off the wall movie, but yeah, something about it. Number three, Dead Man's Shoes. It's a British classic. Paddy Considine just is amazing in this movie. It's a really heartrending kind of visceral movie, but love it. What do we got? Number two, number one. Who am I going to go for here? I've got A River Runs Through It.
Ooh, interesting.
Love that film. I'm a fly fisherman, so of course I'm going to love that movie.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I did not know
But
that about
yeah. Just the whole idea behind it. It follows such an interesting family structure and shows you the different ways in which brothers can be. And they can be, and the father's sort of journey as well, trying to shepherd them through the issues that were going on. And I think number one has to be Tombstone. I'm a massive Tombstone fan. Doc Holliday, Val Kilmer's portrayal of Doc Holliday is sensational. It's everything that we expect that. Or at least the reports of the situation itself. It's everything we would expect from that. Although, there are two different groups of people who have two very opposing ideas on what happened at Tombstone and the gunfight at the OK Corral. But the Earp Brothers, they're American classics. Everybody knows of Wyatt Earp. Everybody knows of the whole idea behind Tombstone. And it's on my bucket list of places to go. I'd love to go and see Tombstone. It would be incredible. So there you
Just
go.
make sure you keep your powder dry.
Absolutely. Honorable mentions, I would have to say again, like I said in the first episode, Blues Brothers. That just has to be there. And also, I was American History X was just in the background there as a, Edward Norton.
Yeah.
Furlong
That's right.
were
And Edward Ford, Furlong.
yeah they were incredible in that movie. Again, that's a very real down sort of visceral movie, but love it. There you go.
All right, excellent. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. We will now play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. And unfortunately, it won't be The Great Escape because you've already gotten that one.
No.
Instead, you've gotten one that you probably have never heard of.
That's far more likely.
Yes, I would say that that's probably what is going to be happening here. Okay, this is a movie from 1957.
Right.
It's called it's a movie from 1957 with Robert Mitchum and Deborah Kerr. And it's about a Marine and a nun who form an unlikely friendship when they are stranded together on a South Pacific island.
Okay.
That was a very enthusiastic okay.
So Robert Mitchum. Right, I've got to try and think of stuff that I've seen him in. I honestly can't think right now. I'm not... any more clues?
It was directed by John Huston.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The character that Mitchum plays is called... Deborah Kerr plays Sister Angela, and Mitchum plays Corporal Allison.
Allison. There was a movie that came out, something Mr. Allison.
Okay. Heaven knows Mr. Allison. That's what it is.
Ah, okay.
I was giving you a hint by telling you that it's Allison.
The name was too much. I remember seeing the name, but I don't... I remember seeing Mr. Allison, but I can't think of what it was.
Fair enough. All right. So, Patty, thank you very much. Would you like for one final time to tell people where they can find you?
Sure. You can find me on social media. And we have recently recorded, or I've recently recorded on a podcast with a team called For You, The War Is Over, where we were talking about The Great Escape and the investigation into The Great Escape.
All right. Excellent. And finding me, it's very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Instagram. So, Patty, thank you very much for joining me once again. Hope that you'll continue to come back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yes, it really has. And I'll be back tomorrow with an interview. Until then, hurry!
Hurry!